Lincoln Floor is the author of the Trubisco, thank you. A boy series from the 18th century mystery stories, one of which, Black Sparkus, was featured in Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine Presents 50 Years of Crime and Suspense. He also writes a contemporary Kellogg series concerning the multiracial Beverly Hills Detective Agency. He is the founder and editor of Criminal Brief, the Mystery Short Story Web Blog Project, and is past president of Mystery Writers of America, Southern California Chapter. He received his BA in Humanities from the University of Texas, San Antonio, and has also served in the U.S. Navy. I can't forget you, I'm on U.S. Army officer. Melody Johnson Howe turned to writing after career in acting. Her first novel, The Mother Shadow, featured Claire Conrad and Maggie Hill, was nominated for the Edgar, Anthony, and Agatha Awards, and her second novel, Beauty Guides, and Follows. Her numerous stories about Diane Poole, a middle-aged actress in Hollywood, have been published in Ellery Queen Magazine, The Best Short Fiction of the Year, and other anthologies. The collection of them will be published under the title The Diana Poole Stories in 2010 by Tristan Lando. In 2005, her short story, Facing Up, was nominated for the Barry Award. Janet Hutchins, editor of Ellery Queen Magazine, says the critical acceptance of her work has received is well-deserved. Hal is one of the genre's best short story writers and novelists. Hal says, I write about what I know, Hollywood, women, men, love, and betrayal, and then I throw in a murder issue. Her work has been published worldwide. She also taught at the UCLA Writers Program and the Santa Barbara Writers Conference. She blogs on criminalbrief.com. You can visit her at the website, melodyjohnsonhow.com, all of her. Our speakers.
Thank you. Forgive me if you see me looking at my watch periodically. Since there are two of us, we have a rather tight budget because we have a time at least, because we have a lot to talk about. Essentially, we're going to divide this into two sections. I'm going to talk of nuts and bolts. I'm going to give you what I know about structuring a short story and how to prepare a short story for commercial submission. And then Melanie is going to pick up the slack and tell you how to write well, which is something that she does better than practically anyone else I know. The first thing I want to mention about short stories is, what makes a short story different from a novel, and what is its place in mystery fiction? Well, in my view, because I am a short story writer, I see the short story as the native form of mystery fiction. Let me just give you this little fact. The most famous detective in fiction is, as we all know, Sherlock Holmes, right? There are 4 Sherlock Holmes novels. There are 66 Sherlock Holmes short stories. Sherlock Holmes is a character who lives in the short story. And if you take a look at most of the earliest writers, the best writers of the last century in fiction, you'll discover that most of them wrote many more short stories than actually wrote novels. Dashiell Hammett, Raymond Chandler, Agatha Christie, Niall Marsh, all of these people actually wrote many more short stories than wrote novels. These days, however, the short story is kind of in trouble. And that's because of different factors, marketing factors, reading habits, all this sort of thing. But they're nowhere near as common as they once were. They used to be the primary market for mystery fiction with magazines and short fiction. Now it's the novel, of course. And that also has to do with what's made available in bookstores, what people publish. No anthology is probably ever going to make it to the bestseller list. And publishers are like movie producers are interested in blockbusters rather than they are interested in qualitative works. So, if you are here to learn how to write short stories and make millions of dollars, you're absolutely in the wrong place. I was going to ask how to make a living as a short story writer. As far as I know, in recent memory, the only person who actually did make a living as a short story writer was Ed Hoke. But my advice is, if you want to make a living as a short story writer, marry rich and marry Moving right along, what makes a story different from a novel? Well, a short story, first of all, has a very significant word in it, and that is short. Because of the length of what you are dealing with when dealing with a short story, you are dealing with something that is qualitatively different from what you have when you are telling a story in a novel. You have a lot less room to get done what you need to get done. That doesn't mean what you get done is the less significant. It just means that every word has to count. I like to say economy in writing, which is fundamental in short story writing, is not the shortest way to say something. It's the best way to say something. That is, you pack as much meaning into as many words as possible so that every word in that short story serves to propel the story forward. Not necessarily action, maybe characterization, maybe description, setting of atmosphere, but every single word has to serve a purpose. Having said that, I want to talk about how a short story is actually structured. How many of you have studied three-act structure? Almost all of you. Now, I have to tell you, I am kind of a heretic in this regard. I don't believe in three-act structure. Not in the sense that I don't believe it exists. That would be very hard to do, since it's taught so much. My problem with three-act structure is that it's terribly confining, and that it also is very formulaic. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't some specific things that you need to do when you structure a short story, but I want you to forget everything you know about plot structure from the point of view of the three-act structure. So let's take a look at what we have structurally in a short story. We have nine elements of plot, all right? The first one is the opening. The short story has to catch your attention from the very first sentence. So an opening is critical. It is a truism that the first sentence in anything you write is the most important sentence in your work. We all know that. However, in a short story, it's even more critical than it is in a novel. Because in a novel, you have a lot more time to set things up. Whereas with a short story, it's like a teaser sequence of a TV show, where they have to get your attention right away. So something in that first sentence, or in that first paragraph, has to engage the reader to propel him forward into the story. Now, the ride you're taking the reader on is only going to last 20 minutes or so. But the point is that 20 minutes is time that could be spent doing something else. So the opening is critical, followed by exposition. Okay, now, exposition is nothing more or less than giving the reader all of the information that reader needs to understand in order for the story to make sense. It only contains the information that the reader needs in order for the story to make sense. There's a word you hear bandied about tremendously now, backstory. Backstory is an invented word, and what it means is information that you know about your characters that inform the story or inform their development that is not necessary for the reader to know about. Therefore, the one thing you should ever, ever, ever do is put backstory in short story, because it doesn't make any difference to the reader. Let me give you a point. Now, this is a novel, but it's still a well-made point. The Maltese Falcon, one of the great mystery stories ever written. How much do we know about Sam Spade? Do we know where he was born? Do we know where he went to school? Do we know how he became a detective? Do we know how he entered into his ill-advised affair with Miles Arkin's wife? No, we don't know any of that information. And does it matter? No, because none of that information has anything to do with the problem of the bird. Likewise, in a short story, the exposition, the background that you are setting the story against, has to only be the stuff that is going to matter to the reader. Point of conflict. This is the part of the story where your protagonist is compelled to act. Now, it can be dramatic or it can be simple, but the point is that this is where the action starts rolling. There's a conflict that arises, and your protagonist at this point has no choice but to move forward. This is what Campbell would call the call to adventure. Which I'm not a big believer in Campbell either, but it is a critical element in short story. Development. This is the meat of the story. It's also the part that's going to take up the most of what you are going to write. And that's where, from the point where your detective or your protagonist is compelled to act until he reaches a point of unsustainable tension. So this is going to be the actual meat of probably the largest part of the story, followed by the point of crisis or an emotional climax. This is where everything comes to a head. This is a point of unsustainable action or crisis where something's got to give at some point or another. Now, in a war story, for example, the emotional climax may be in the midst of a pitched battle and your hero is shot, grazed in the head, and falls unconscious on the battlefield. That's an example of emotional climax. After that, you have to let the reader down gently a little bit, because, as I said, the point of crisis itself is unsustainable, and that's where abatement comes in. That's where you tamp things down a little bit and back off from the action. This is followed by the denouement, or technical climax. A technical climax is that famous point in every Ratio Sinica's detective story ever told, where the detective says, I'm sure you're all wondering why I left 2 years ago. All of you had means, motive, or opportunity, but only one of you had all three. And what happens with the denouement is that that's the point where the reader understands how the story ends and what's going to happen from that point forward. So it is in some sense, marks the end of the action. This is followed by resolution, which is simply tying up all the other loose ends that you may have in your story. And then finally, a strong closing. The biggest complaint that editors have for short stories is that writers do not know how to end their stories. What happens frequently is that somebody will come to the end of the story and they run out of steam or don't know what to say next, so they just end it. Or they will take something to try to suggest that there is some further on activity that's going to go on. Leave that out of your short stories. A short story should be self-contained. It should be complete. You don't have to foreshadow anything else. What happens a lot of times when people want to write a short story is they take a novel that they are working on and they will extract a chapter and try to beat that into a short story. That's not the way it works. A short story has to be self-contained. And it does not necessarily have to contain references to any follow-on or previous action. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't make references to your earlier work or to other events that may happen in the future, or suggest things that may happen in the future. My only point is that if we do that, it has to be organic to the story that you were telling at the time. So we have these nine elements. Now, these nine elements are not always required. Furthermore, they can be combined, as you might want to do in order to make your storytelling more economical. But if you're going to take a basic look at the structure of what the story looks like, it's like something like this. See this little graph that I've drawn. We start with the opening, followed by exposition. The exposition ends at the point of conflict. Then the development continues up until you reach the point of crisis, followed by some abatement action, the denouement, resolution, and finally the closing. Now, as you can see, the way this is set up, there are two different structural elements that you're dealing with, essentially. You're dealing with points, and you're dealing with streams. Okay, a point is a resting place in the action. That doesn't mean that it has to be static, but it means that you have made whatever conclusion or drawn your reader to reach some specific state, and that's where the point is. Obviously, the beginning is going to be a point. The point at which the detective is compelled to act is going to be a point. Unsustainable crisis is going to be a point. Denouement will be a point. Closing will be a point. Everything between them, however, is a stream, a narrative stream, that is getting from this point to that point by following the track of that narrative stream. So if you, in your head, when you are planning your story, you should have ideas of where the points are and then how much the streams are going to take between them. Am I asking you to graph your stories? No. I didn't know any two writers who work the same way. My good friend Scott Phillips, when he writes a story, will have a character, a very finely defined character, and he will put him in a situation and then follow him around until he reaches the end of the story. And that's how he writes his novels. And he writes brilliant novels. Any people with any have read any of his stuff. He made a movie out of his first book, The Ice Harvest, that's just fabulous. But that's the way Scott works. Robert Price, on the other hand, who's our guest this afternoon, is an outlining fool. He will write a 40-page outline with every single activity or action or thing that happens in his story listed in that outline before he actually starts writing the narrative and the prose of his novel. So when I'm telling you, looking at this diagram, I'm not telling you that you have to diagram or that diagramming is necessary in order to structure your story. I'm just using this as an illustration or a means to get you to think about what those points, elements, and streams are that you're going to use. Now, short stories essentially come in the mystery world in three flavors. Those flavors are flash, short story, and novelette. Now, these all have different requirements, and they all have different marks. A flash story is usually one defined that is less than 1,000 words. Typically, flashes are around 500 words. The number one market for mystery writers for flash fiction is Woman's World, that magazine that you buy in the grocery store. They have a limit of 300 words, but the only stories that you're going to sell to Woman's World are going to be flash stories. The short story is the mainstay of short fiction writing. It has usually between 3,500 to 7,500 words. The markets for that are anthologies, anthologies, Green, and Alfred Hitchcock. There are also some semi-pro markets, and I left one out, Strand Magazine. But there are also some semi-pro, what I would call semi-pro markets, for example, Futures Mystery Anthology Magazine, I would call a semi-pro market, because they don't pay by the word. They pay $10 and give you a prompt copy. Every other commercial or professional market will pay you according to how long your manuscript is. And they will pay according to their word count. I have a lot more to say about word counts, because the one thing you have to do as a short story writer is think in terms of word length, not in terms of pages. Think about how many words your story is, because that's how you're going to get paid, first of all. And secondly, the editor is worried about prominence. And what she cares about is not how many pages your manuscript fills out, but how long it's going to be when it appears in print. Finally, the novelette. Essentially, there are two major markets for novelettes. Alfred Hitchcock and Ellery Queen. And they both have different requirements for those novelettes. In Alfred Hitchcock, a novelette can only be up to 14,000 words. In Ellery Queen, it can be up to 20,000 words. So if you have a longer story, Ellery Queen is a more likely market than Alfred Hitchcock. However, having said that, that's not going to be the primary consideration on those two markets, of which I will have more to say later. Okay, remember when I said, though, the flash story is less than 1,000 words. A flash story has a very peculiar structure. It looks something like this. Now, you see, that's a much simpler diagram than one I gave you for the short story in general. And you can see that there are different colors here. That's because what happens in the flash story is many of those points that are in the story are combined. So the way a flash story works is, it's like a telling a joke, okay? You have set up, punchline, and that's it. Okay? So what happens in the structure is that your opening and conflict are exactly the same point. You have to start a flash story with that conflict because you don't have enough time to do any other development. Then development and exposition, all the information and the tension buildup have to happen simultaneously. So there's that upward curve. And then finally, at the end of the story, the punchline, you combine the crisis, the denouement, and the closing all at once. Usually it's a one-liner. I'll give an example of a flash story I read several years ago. I'm afraid I don't recall the name of the author. But it was a story where a woman is contemplating this man that she completely loathes. Now, we know that this is kind of a trite beginning for most mystery fiction. The one thing I have to say for any of you who want to write short stories is never, ever, ever begin a story with a wife and a husband at the breakfast table and a wife contemplating murdering her husband. But this is just the worst trite thing you can possibly write. But in this particular story, the woman is contemplating how she's going to cut up her husband. And the way that she is thinking about all of this through, you are convinced that this is some maniac. And that she's planning to do something extremely violent and cold and monstrous. And then at the end of the story, you learn that he's under the knife because she's a surgeon. Don't feel too good that he's going to come out of that operation too well. But that's an example of the way a flash story works. All right. This is your much-wanted three-act structure as proposed by Sid Field, right here on the top diagram. You can see what he has is an inciting incident during Act 1, followed by the end of Act 1, which is plot point 1. A midpoint, a plot point 2, which is the end of Act 2, and then the resolution and climax in Act 3. I really hate this structure. Set up, confrontation, resolution.
So he's presenting it.
Yeah. What I want to show you is if you take the same concepts, and you use what I have, the one that I learned in 12th grade honors English way back. Thank you, Mrs. Mullen, wherever you are. This is what that looks like if you actually trace it out according to my little color-coded diagram here. I put down the lines to show where the acts are. Okay, what he calls the inciting incident, I call the point of conflict. Somewhere in the middle of the development, he'll end Act 1 on some kind of cadence or resting point, and then pick up Act 2 with the increasing tension. He'll end Act 2 what I call an intermediate crisis or a crisis of confidence. Typically in three-act structure, what happens at the end of Act 2 is your detective is utterly defeated. He's accused the wrong person, and his reputation is now in tatters. And he has a crisis of confidence. How can I go on? And then in Act 3, he starts all over again. And you can see that essentially what happens is that original diagram that I set up for you is now repeated in Act 3. The point of all of this is that this is much more limiting than this is. And the if you want to go ahead and figure out how to tell your story, you should not slavishly follow any kind of formula. But you still have to have a very solid and economic structure of what it is that you're writing. This is an example of the story I wrote, the way I graphed it out, called Acting and Alibi. In this particular story, I borrowed a trick from television, and that is starting the story with a semi-prologue, like they do in Law and Order, for example. You always have the two guys, you know, collecting garbage or whatever, and they pick up the paper and find a body there, right? In this particular story, it begins, takes place in the 1770s, and it begins in a forest with a man running through the forest, and he hears hounds in the background, and the next thing that happens is he's attacked by the hounds. That is both the opening and the initial conflict. Followed by a short period of abatement where his body is discovered by his neighbors who are out looking for him. And what happens during that abatement point is the man who discovers the body says, it's horrible. He's been killed by his own hounds. Followed by a new opening, we now move the action to London where my detective is sitting at Lloyd's of London. And he's called in to consult with the insurance man, and he finds out that there is a crisis in timber for the Royal Navy. And the approximate cause of this is fraud dealing with the timber in the Royal Forests. And this death happened in one of those forests, and it is believed that it has something to do with the fact that the dead man was trying to prevent the fraud from happening. So he's then hired, point of conflict, he has this problem to solve. Goes out to the Forest of Dean, where it takes place, until finally we get to a point where he finds out who the bad guy is. And I'm sure you all are wondering why I asked you to hear point happens identically with the emotional climax, because he gets shot by the bad guy. But the abatement and the resolution happen at the same time. I tie up all the loose ends and characters off to where they need to go, and you know how everything is going to end up, because the denouement and the crisis are the same. And then finally, the end of the story is a very ironic comment that's made by my detective. Now you can see that this diagram does not slavishly follow the one that I first showed you. You can see, though, that it has all the same elements. It's just that what's happened is I've combined elements in different places, and I've used some elements more than once. For example, let's talk about exposition for a minute. The exposition doesn't have to happen between the opening and the conflict. Lots of times the exposition will happen during the development, particularly the detective story, when you are throwing clues out to the reader. Okay? Counting words. Counting words is a very important thing for you to do. Now, counting words is not just going to sell your story, it's not going to keep your story from being sold, but it will make the editor love you. And that's important, because one of the things you want to do as an author is to cultivate the editor. If you are going to sell stories to anthologies, for example, it is almost impossible not to cultivate the editor, because you will not be asked to write a story for that anthology unless the editor knows who you are. So getting along with editors and knowing what editors want, what their standards are, is critical in the short story field. Okay? Counting words is important because, as I said, what an editor is looking for is tone inches in the magazine or for a specific length in order to fill out 200 pages in the book, of which I will say more about word lengths and what your choices ought to be with regard to word lengths. But essentially, there are three major methods that you have available to you for counting the number of words you have in the story. Melody never counts the words in her stories. She doesn't need to because she's a genius, and everything she writes is going to get published. But most of us need to know exactly how likely it is for us to sell that story, how many column inches the editor is going to need. For example, I mentioned that short stories are the mainstay, but you also can sell novelettes. Well, let's think about this for a minute. If you write a 20,000-word novelette, that takes up the equivalent space of 4 5,000-word short stories. Therefore, if you write a 5,000-word short story, you are 4 times likelier to sell it than if you write a 20,000-word novelette. That's why I said that's the mainstay. If you are writing for an anthology, there's almost always a cutoff of 7,500 words. that anything longer than that is not going to get published. So it is important for you to be able to think of word rights and not in page lengths. Now, the three methods that you have available to you are word processor, the Courier 12-point method, and the three-page, three-line method, which is what they actually use at Hitchcock. Word processors, when you go into your word processor, you go up to the Tools menu, and you put word count, and it gives you the number of words. As far as word lengths are concerned in short stories, that does not work. Okay? The problem is that what that is actually doing is counting words. And when we're talking about counting words, like I said, we're not actually concerned with how many words are actually in the story. We're more concerned with how many characters are in the story, that is, how many letters and spaces. And that's what an editor means when she says she wants the word count. And usually they would say word count consists of a single word is five letters in space, six characters. That's a typical word length. So the word processor word length, although you are certainly free to use it, will not give you an accurate indication of how long that word is according to the editor, and also will not give you an indication of how much the editor is going to pay you for that short story. The Courier 12-point method only works if you are using 12-point Courier as the font that you are writing on, and you have 25 lines per page. And essentially the rule is that if you use Courier 12-point and 25 lines per page, you have 250 words per page. So each page is 250 words. I don't recommend it. First of all, very few people use Courier anymore when they're writing prose typescripts. It's a little colorless and doesn't give any character to your story. Now, if you're writing a screenplay, the only thing you will ever go to use is 12-point Courier. And that's because that is a functional demand of the industry. But how many of you use Courier? Less than a third of you. I, for example, will use different fonts depending upon which one I think fits the character of my story. But I almost always use a serif font because I think they look more professional. The three-page, three-line method, it just is what they actually use at Hitchcock. What that does is you go to the middle of your story. You pick three pages out of the middle. You take the first three lines of those three pages. You count the number of words in all nine lines and then divide by nine. And that gives you the number of words that you have per line. Then you go through, figure out how many lines you have per page, multiply it by that, taking into account what the difference is going to be on the first page, which is only going to have half as many characters, and the last page, which may or may not have, any number of different lines. And that's how they actually count words at Hitchcock. So if you do that, that will give you the most accurate method. Now, it may not be exactly what they come up with in the editorial offices of Dell magazines in New York, but that is the closest you're going to get. So that's the one I recommend. However, in any of these methods, there's something very important to remember with regard to word processing, and that is you should always disable widow orphan control. Do you guys know what that is?
No.
Okay. Most word processors are aimed at business. They're not aimed at creative writing. And what that means is that when you write a letter or a report or whatever, it's supposed to look pretty. Well, what widow orphan is, a widow is a line that is by itself at the top of a page. And an orphan is a line that is by itself at the bottom of the page. When you put on widow and orphan control, what that does is it will move that lonely line to the other page.
Oh.
So that you'll have 26 lines on one page and 24 on the next. Don't do that. Because if you do that, it will completely throw off your work. So go into your word processor, find under options, if you use Microsoft Word, find the widow orphan and turn it off. Because the editor doesn't care if you have a lonely line at the top of the page or at the bottom of the page. Selling the story. The most important thing about selling a short story is to write a good short story. It should be obvious. But there are other things that you can do to help improve your odds. The first thing is you should match the submission to a specific market. All right? Selling a story to Janet Hutchings at Ellery Queen is not the same as selling a story to Linda Madigan at Alfred Fisher. They have different ideas as to what they want in their magazines. Janet prefers very traditional detective stories. Now, they can be in any genre of detective story. You can write a hard novel, a noir, a cozy, a humorous, any number of different things. But she wants to have a story that has a crime in it, a detective, and a solution. Linda, on the other hand, at Hitchcock, the only thing she cares about is whether or not there's a crime in the story. Okay? And whether or not that crime is resolved may not be very important to her. Also, Janet will not publish paranormals, but Linda will. So you need to match your story to a specific marker and know what it is the editor wants, the editor expects. Some people may think of this as being a compromise to their artistic integrity, to which I say, hogwash. Okay? Shakespeare wrote plays and Shakespeare wrote sonnets. The sonnets are just about as expressive as the plays are, but they're much more constrained because he was following a very strict form. This is what you need to think of when you're writing for a market, is within the constraints of that market, how can I do the best job possible? Okay? Do not submit to more than one editor at a time. Novelists, when they're trying to shop out their books, will send manuscripts to any number of different agents looking for an agent. And maybe one of them will bite. However, if you do that in the short story market, the story will not be published. Because editors at short story markets want to have exclusive access to your story if they want it. So what you need to do is submit it to one editor. If it gets rejected there, submit it to another editor. If it gets rejected there, submit it to a third editor. Do not send the story to three editors at once. Writer's guidelines. Practically every writer's market, short story market, will provide you with writer's guidelines. You can find them for the Dell magazines online. Usually for the NWA anthologies, for example, the guidelines are published when they have a call for manuscripts. You should obey those guidelines. Now, obeying the guidelines is not going to make sure that your story is sold, and very rarely does it mean that the story will be rejected if you violate those guidelines. For example, one thing that you frequently see in writer's guidelines is do not italicize the text, underline instead, we will italicize it for you. I have always ignored that. And I always use italics. And you know what? The editors don't care. So it doesn't necessarily be strict. However, what it does do when you don't obey a guideline, it shows that you have no respect for the editor. So it's important that you do that and follow those guidelines because you are then fulfilling the editor's direct expectations. And one thing we're not doing is irritating her by doing something that she specifically told you not to do. Now, at Dell Magazine, every submission gets read, no matter how good or bad it is or how well professionally prepared it is. Every one of them gets read. And the story will sell usually on the strength of how good the story is. However, what you don't want to do is distract the editor away from the story by doing things that are contrary to the guidelines. So obey the guidelines. Next question, common question, cover letter. Should I have a cover letter? And the general answer is no. You do not need a cover letter for a short story submission because every short story gets written by the editor that submitted it. However, there may be times when you would like to have a cover letter for a specific purpose other than selling the story. For example, if you're friends with the editor. Every time I write a letter, I write a story to Linda Landrigan at Hitchcock, I tell her about how my wife and cats are doing. Because I know that she's interested in my wife and cats. Well, not the way that sounds. on the other hand, if you might want to have a cover letter if you have been published elsewhere to let the editor know that you're a professional. And why is that important? Because that will prevent you from getting on the slush pile. What is a slush pile? A slush pile is the collection of unsolicited manuscripts that the assistant editor has to go through looking for the gem in order to pass on to the editor for consideration to buy. If you are a well-established professional author, you can skip the slush pile and go directly to the editor. Okay. So that may be another reason why you want to include a cover letter. And that's all I have for now. And I'm going to open it up for questions now. We'll do that for about 10 minutes, and then I'll turn it over to Melody. Yes?
Jim, would you talk about copyright?
Okay. This American copyright law is that as soon as you have finished something, you automatically own the copyright. When you send that story into a market, what happens is the market will buy specific rights from you. In the case of a magazine, they will buy the first serial publication rights. That means in a magazine. They will usually pay for first refusal on anthology rights. They will give you an anthology writer. They pay $50 more if they choose to include it in an anthology. And they will buy first refusal rights for development into drama. What they will not do, however, is fill out a copyright form and lodge that with the government. If you want to have a formal copyright for your short fiction, you have to do it yourself. Other questions? Yes.
I was just told articles and things, but first to North American rights. What's that?
Yeah, that's just the right. That means that you can sell that to, if you have the same article, you can sell it to a market in Britain, or you can sell it to a market in Hong Kong or whatever. It's only in North America that they're buying rights. Yes?
Could you do me a favor? On the three-page, three-line, would you run that through again?
All right. Take 3 pages out of the middle of your manuscript. The top 3 lines of each page count the number of words. Divide that by 9, which is the number of lines that you have. That will give you the number of words per line. Then you count the number of lines you have per page. Multiply that number by that number. Then multiply that number by the number of pages that you have in your manuscript.
Just so I don't count words.
Yes.
The word officer also allows you to do character count as well as. Is that character count also inaccurate?
You know what, I wouldn't trust it, mainly because when they're looking at column lengths, M is a longer letter than N in a non-proportional font.
Right.
So the thing is, what you were actually looking for, what happens, generally speaking, in a short paragraph, your style is going to come through. And if you, particular words and absences and silence and whatever that you use are going to come through. And in a non-proportional font, like I said, N is a bigger letter than N. But if you do a character count, they're one character each.
And when you're sending it, you send out a cover letter, so you don't need to let them know how many words it is?
No, you should at the top of the manuscript preparation. Everybody know how to prepare a professional manuscript? Yes, no? Raise your, okay, I'll go very, very quickly. Professional short-story manuscript, at the very top of the page, somewhere left or right-hand corner, should be the name that you want to check me out to, your address, your phone number, your email address if you have one, and an estimated word count. Okay, halfway down the page, right in the middle of the page should be the title in capital letters, skip a line, and then the byline. Now, the byline doesn't have to be your real name. The name they're going to make the checkout to is going to be the one in the corner up in the beginning. And then double space everything thereafter. As far as pagination is concerned, paginate at the margin in the top, not at the bottom. And there are any number of ways to do that. But one, the way that I use is I always have my name, my last name, Warren, dash, page number, dash, title. The reason for that is because when the editor is reading through it, she may have opportunity to figure out, say, who is this guy again? And your name is right there on the top of the page, and likewise the title of the story. No other questions? Yes?
What do you think about literary magazine contests for emerging writers?
I think that your odds are much better going directly to a commercial market. Okay. Now, there are lots of people who live for contests. And there are people who specifically enjoy entering contests. But typically speaking, a contest will have a, say, a prize of maybe $500, if that. Okay? You will get, you know, 300, 400 submissions to that contest. And then when you win and beat out all those other 500 magazines, you are being paid below market rates. Why not just send it to Ellery Queen, where your odds are more or less the same, and you're going to get paid per word and get $800. So I'm not a big fan of contests. The other thing, too, about contests is you never really know who's judging. So it's very difficult to know in advance whether or not you are appealing to the contest judges to win that prize. Yes?
This may come up later on, but what do you feel about e-zines versus, like, you know, Hitchcock and other?
This depends on what your ambitions are. Okay? I don't think there's anything wrong with publishing any of your fiction anywhere. But if what you want to have is professional cred, an e-zine is not going to do you any good. That's all there is to it. But if what you want to do is see your magazine in print and hand out the copies to your friends or whatever, or be part of a fan community, you know, fanfic is almost all published in e-zines, either online or fanzines online or whatever, then that's obviously the way to go. So it depends on what your ambitions are. All right, and then let me turn it over to the fabulous Melody Johnson Powell. Thank you very much for your attention.
I do have a story to tell on myself. I don't count words. I just was totally confused by what he was saying. My head didn't get back. Mainly because the first story, fine, it's M. I would hope that writers don't, in order to get an $800 check, you know, pad your short story with more words, because you're just going to ruin it. But to my point about me not counting words, I in my last story, I got this puny check from Ellery Queen. I'm like, well, what's going on? Is it the economy or something? And I call, and I'm talking to Janet's assistant, and I say, you know, hey, is you know, I don't want to, you know, say anything, but I really got a small check for this short story. And she goes, well, Melody, that was all the words you wrote in that short story. We count by the word. And I go, oh, so I've been writing for Ellery Queen for I don't know how many years. I did not know that, okay? I live in a creating bubble, all right? I will admit it. And I bumble through life in the world and, you know, my profession that way. And actually, I've been lucky because, you know, I didn't, you know, but, and I still don't count words. I don't put my name at the top of the page. I don't do anything that Jim said, which doesn't mean you shouldn't do it, especially when you're starting. Now, I think of the novel as the Orient Express, a wonderful train taking you on a long journey and hopefully a very suspenseful, extraordinary one. And I think of the short story as a silver Corvette. It can go from 0 to 60 in 10 to 35 pages. And that's the difference between them. And therefore, you need different techniques to write them. In the short story, the plot should be simple. Actually, I think in the novel, the plot should be simple. But you can have a lot of complications around it in a novel. But in a short story, the plot is simple. The complications should be simple. Now, some people say there should be few settings. I'm not so sure about this. But again, it depends on how long your short story is and how cohesive it is. With a lot of settings, you're going to be leaping around. And you can dissipate the intensity of your story. The time span should be short. I mean, you don't want to cover a year. Now, again, you can. Every rule should be broken, okay? And you can do it by quick cuts. I wouldn't say, well, you know, now we waited for 6 months and I had to go to the thing with it and you're finally getting to the period of time you want to. Just cut and be in that period of time. So then you can have an arc of time. The characters should be few and strongly, this is very important, drawn, firmly drawn, bold, firm brushstrokes. Now, sometimes when I'm writing a short story, it'll take me 2-3 pages to get a character. And then I will read those 3 pages, and I will X, 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 and I'll come out with 6 great lines. And there's the description of my character. But it may take me writing 3 pages to get there. So allow yourself that. Flannery O'Connor said something once. She's a great short story writer. Nobody's read her, by the way. Southern writer. Literary writer. She said that a writer has to allow herself to be stupid. Now, what did she mean by that? She means that you have to sit there writing until you come to that moment, that aha moment. Oh, I know what I'm doing now. Because you don't always know what you're doing when you start. Even with the graphs and the things, you write yourself into a cul-de-sac. You know, you're going around and around and around. You got to get back out. That's another 5 pages gone. But allow yourself that. That's the process of writing. Failure, success. Failure, success. But the failures are always giving you a little sense of where you're going. Be aware of that in your work. Now, know your characters, as I said. You can tell a short story writer who knows her or his characters. They just come right onto the page, boom, and they're there. And you don't doubt them at all. And I can always tell a short story writer who does not know her characters. They kind of wander a little. They're vague. They're looking out a window. And I put the short story down. Now, they always say in a short story to keep the description, the atmosphere, the mood, the tone, all of that short. But I think this is a rule that can be broken, because I think it's very important to the short story. Now, again, it's that characterization. You're not going to go on a whole page describing a party. You're going to, again, describe it in a paragraph or 10 lines or something. Now, I think everybody knows the short story Red Wind by Raymond Chandler. Okay. He breaks the rules here, the way he opens the story, because this opening really doesn't have much to do with the plot, but it sets the tone for the story. It sets the atmosphere. It sets suspense. And here is the famous opening. There was a desert wind blowing that night. It was one of those hot, dry Santa Anas that come down through the mountain passes and curl your hair and make your nerves jump and your skin itch. On nights like that, every blues party ends in a fight. Meek little wives feel the edge of the carving knife and study their husbands' necks. Anything can happen. You can even get a full glass of beer at a cocktail lounge. Now, are you riveted by that?
Yeah.
Now, throughout this story, and I've sort of marked the pages where the wind comes in, and it comes in almost on every page, but usually in 4 words, a single line, and that's it. He never really, but it's always there. It's banging a door. He opens a window right into his face still shriveled, you know. But at the end of the story, where does he end up? But sitting on a rock in Malibu with the ocean air, with the moisture in the air, throwing fake pearls into the sea. You know, this is a great beginning. Now, this is how atmosphere can make a short story. And his plot is all, you know, it's about betrayal. It's about, you know, who murdered who. It's a Chandler plot. But it's that atmosphere that really carries the story. Now, let me get my name over here. Okay. The end of a short story, unlike the novel, I mean, you don't have 5 pages to wrap it up. You don't really have any pages to wrap it up, in all honesty. A short story ends when it ends. And you have to, it's like dancing, you know, it's like singing. It's a song, and you know you're coming to the end, and you're going to give it your all. There's, in a short story, they have their own time and rhythm to them. And you have to be aware of that as a writer when you're writing a short story. Don't try to force it. Don't try to, well, you know, pad it. You know, I'm going to get another $100 if I add another, you know. Because, you know, you're not going to get it published. You know when the short story ends. And when you come to your end, I would look at it very carefully and see maybe if I could end it even quicker than where I did end it. Or end it in edit the paragraph, edit that last page. You should take out everything that is unnecessary in a short story. You know, when I was learning the craft of writing way back when, we all wrote short stories. We never thought of writing novels. And everybody today that's learning to write has a novel. And they workshop it, and they never quite let go of this novel. They never send it out, so they never get to test the waters. And I wish people would go back to writing short stories, because they're short. You can finish them. You can send them out. You can get your feet wet. You can actually get out there in the publishing world. You may get rejected. We all have. You know, welcome. Welcome to the world. You need a thick skin. But it puts you out there, where if you carry this novel around year after year after year, that you're probably never going to finish, in all honesty. You know, It's never going to put you out there. You never get to test the world of publishing. This is where I wish they really were teaching short stories again. And it gives you a great sense of craft. You really do learn your craft in writing a short story. Side issues in a short story are... I, I,
I'm always ambivalent about it because I never know really what are side issues and what are important to characterization. And, you know, it's actually very hard for me to talk about short stories because I really don't deconstruct them. But side issues in a novel are a good thing. They can complicate the plot. They give it many layers. In a short story, they can be a distraction. They can slow your story down. So if a side issue is just there to fill space, your protagonist has a lover that really doesn't do much in the story, then don't have her or him. You know, I mean, every character that's in that story must have a reason for being in it. Must define the other character or define the plot. Dialogue in a short story is very important. And it might be because I was an actress that I got to say a lot of wonderful lines. One of my favorite was, "I'll have a stone bruise on my ass." And one of my worst lines was, "It's in the silver chalice." Now, I went, "It's in the silver chalice. It's in the silver chalice." You know, I mean, God, it was just, I couldn't get it out. But I picked up an ear for dialogue doing that because I had to say it out loud as an actress. Say your dialogue out loud. Listen to it. Does it ring true or does it just clunk? And dialogue is not exposition. It does move the plot, but it should never be, well, I'm going there because I have to do, you know, and I'm, you know, and I know there's a clue and I'm going to find blah, 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 blah. No. You have to put your character in some sort of emotional situation. So when they talk, they're talking out of that emotional situation. This is another thing about characterization. When you write those 5 pages to find out who your character is, you're also going to find out the way they talk. Everybody speaks differently. But in short stories, they can speak differently, but they must speak quickly. Because that will slow your plot down and slow the pace. Pace is very important. I have to dance in a film, and I cannot dance. And I have no sense of rhythm, except when I write stories. And I had to dance and sing, and they lip synced for me, thank God. So when I was dancing, I could never finish the dance on time. Because I couldn't hear the music. I mean, I couldn't hear it. I mean, I just, you know. So there was this poor choreographer stood by the camera and went, as, you know, as I'm up there flailing around, you know. Okay. And it's rather hysterical when you see it because I'm in this sexy pose. I'm ending, and the music is still going, ba-dum, 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 you know. I never ended on time because I had no feel for it. I think you have to have a feel for a short story. It's something in your gut. It's something inside. You can learn the craft of the short story, but to learn the kind of pace, it's almost like being a stand-up comic. They have a pace, a rhythm. You know, you need that in your short story. You need to be aware of your pace and rhythm. Okay, I am going to dare to read from one of my short stories. In fact, this is a short story I got the puny little check from, okay? Never again. Maybe I should count my words. But you see, it ended when it ended. I didn't know. I thought I was still going to get my big bucks. Really big. Okay. How do you open, create suspense, introduce a character, all of that? That's a lot to do in an opening page for a story, but you have to do it. Okay, this is called a Hollywood ending. Okay? Your daughter is waiting for you in the lobby, ma'am. The banquet waiter hovered over me, balancing a tray of coffee pots and cups. I was sitting at a table of 10 women at a Planned Parenthood luncheon being held in the banquet room of the Beverly Wilshire Hotel. The women were movie producers, production executives, a director, and an agent. Enormous crystal chandeliers splattered their prismatic patterns of light on us like stardust. "I don't have a daughter," I told him. "She pointed you out." He moved off to serve the next table. All right, she doesn't have a daughter. She's at a Planned Parenthood meeting, and someone has just pointed her out as her mother. Now, then I have to describe my character, okay? So, There's some dialogue, and then my character says to herself, she's thinking, as with all things I do now, I was here because it might be good for my career. This is the past. My husband, Colin, a screenwriter, had died suddenly of a heart attack over a year ago. He left me with what the realtors euphemistically call a teardown in Malibu and an old Jaguar, two Oscars, each for best screenplay, and an empty bank account and an emptier heart. So I've gone back to what I've been doing before I married him, acting. Except now I was older and the parts were fewer. Now she stares at the flowers and she begins to think that all the women around the table are either premenopausal, menopausal, you know, and they're still all at this Planned Parenthood meeting. And then I write. Then I found myself peering back at the row of large double doors that led to the lobby. I realized I was looking for a girl searching for her mother. Now, if I hadn't added that sentence to that paragraph where you've learned about my character, Diana Poole, then it wouldn't have meant anything. I would have just described her. No suspense would be created. Now, again, when she leaves, the doorman tells her daughter is looking for her. So, woo! Nobody ever calls me.
Yes. It's your agent, Melody.
Oh, God. Oh, this is, and look at this old one I have. Okay. Here, I'm turning it off. It's probably Gail. Come on, we'll leave town. Sorry. Okay. So, the doorman tells her she's, you know, her daughter wants to, is waiting for her. It's waiting for her at her home. Now, okay, so, driving back to Malibu, I opened the windows to the sunroof because I couldn't get the Jag's heater turned off. Sweat ran down the inside of my legs. The wind pulled at my determinedly blonde hair. I kept thinking about the waiter telling me about my daughter. I dismissed him by thinking he'd got the wrong woman. But now the conversation with the hotel doorman unnerved me. My daughter was going to meet me at home, my daughter. I began to wonder what a daughter of mine would look like. She would be a natural blonde, as I once had been. Her eyes would be blue like mine, too. While my features were settling into a look of defiant permanence, hers would be full of anticipation and discovery. Another loss, as breathtaking as my husband's death, washed over me. I never had a child. Career first, then Colin's career. Stop it, Diana. I go to a Planned Parenthood luncheon and end up with a phantom daughter. I tried to smile at the irony of the situation, but the sweat on my legs had turned cold. I checked the rearview mirror to see if a young woman in search of her mother was following me home. And, of course, she gets home, and the young girl is waiting for her there. And she has a gun. And they sit and talk until the young girl eventually kills herself. That's the Hollywood ending. And the young girl is a child star that Diana once worked with, and she played her mother. And the child star grew up. They dismissed her because she grew up. She's no longer the little child. And they tossed her out of Hollywood and fame, and her own mother rejected her because she wasn't making money anymore. So she latches on to Diana just for somebody to talk to before she's going to kill herself. 15 minutes I have. So we've got questions here. T.S. Eliot said that in your first step is your last step. What do you think he meant by that?
Your beginning determines your end.
Right. In your first step is your last step, the step toward death. The step, you know, beginning to end. And it's the same with the short story. What begins has to be reflected at the end. There has to be a, um, uh, I don't know what it's called, but it has to shadow it so that when the short story is finished, you feel a completion. You don't feel that it's just kind of wandered off toward a conclusion. Past in a short story. You were talking about backstories. Is that what you said? Okay. I think it was Ross McDonald who said that the past is always in the present. It's what moves the story is the past. Because most things don't just happen. They happen because there's a past. And again, when you write a short story, you can talk about the past. But you can also talk about it in six lines. It doesn't have to be a page. It doesn't have to be two pages. You may write six pages to get that past. And once you do, go through with that red pen again and begin Xing out all the unnecessary stuff. You get down to those pertinent lines that really describe that past. Okay. I want to say something. Oh, I wrote a story. I mean, I lied. But Jeff Parker is doing an anthology on angling, fishing. So he asked me if I could write a story on angling. But he said, "Are you a fisherman?" And I said, "Oh, yes." Do I look like a fisherman? I mean, I don't know. You know, give me a white linen tablecloth and a glass of wine and I'm happy. Okay. So, and I did, my father would take me to Montana, and my brother, and my father was a fisherman. So I thought, how difficult can it be? So I called my brother, and I said, "So tell me about fly fishing. You know, we used to stand on the river and watch my father and you guys fish." And he said, "No, we were bait fishermen." I go, "There's a difference?" Google. Google. Now, here I'm really out of my element. It's not Diana, it's not Hollywood. I'm in, you know, the woods in Montana and all of that. But the imagination is wonderful. If you let yourself go and don't become traumatized, "Oh, God, I don't know anything about fishing." Of course I don't. But I'm a writer. I don't know anything about being a nun either, but I could write about one. You know, don't put limits on yourself. I even have, for the first time, maybe in mystery literature, I use a cow as a weapon. Jeff said I should get the American Dairy Association Award. So I bring this up only to show you that you can start something scared to death because you don't know any. Of course, when you're writing for money, you do what you do. But you can do it. That's, you know, you're writers. You have imagination. Use it. Use it. Let it go. Let it go. And let the story happen. Don't keep picking at it and trying to force it into situations. A story will happen if you're in tune with it. Okay, I'm going to leave you with this. The word hope. In this sort of cynical day and age where, you know, people are sort of contorting themselves into ironic positions and everybody is hip and shallow and, you know. Writing is an act of hope. By the very nature of it, you sit down to write a short story or a novel, you're committing an act of hope. Hope that you'll get through the damn thing. Hope that you'll be published. Hope that it'll be good. Hope that I can really do this. But it says something wonderful about human nature, that you can hope. And that's what this is all about. And when it's finished and you do get published, there's nothing more wonderful. When my first book was published, I broke into tears. You know, it was important. You know, love what you do. Love it. Okay, guys, that's it. Questions? Hello. Give me New York.
Okay, I have one.
Oh, dear. He scares me.
Red Wind. There's something very important for you about Red Wind. We had this discussion months ago.
Oh, the clothes.
Yes, the passage. Read it.
Oh, yeah.
This is so cool.
We were talking. Yeah, okay. I don't have that marked. Okay.
I think you did. I saw it.
Oh, did you? Okay. Okay. The drunk with. Oh, very good. Okay. Marla, is in a bar, and of course, a guy comes in and shoots another guy. But first he says, "Seen a lady in here, buddy? Tall, pretty, brown hair, and a print bolero jacket over a blue crepe silk dress, wearing a wide-brimmed straw hat with a velvet band. He had a tight voice I didn't like." Now, this guy gets killed. Now, what am I doing?
It's finally...
killing all that. But that wasn't what I was thinking at all. This is Marla thinking. I was thinking that Waldo had described the girl's clothes in a way the ordinary man wouldn't know how to describe. Now, when you hear that dialogue before, you think, oh my God, he's going, you know, why is he describing her that way? Chandler is clever. Not only does he get the woman described perfectly, but then he uses it against his character, which means Waldo, you know, he really knows about women's clothes. Okay. I was thinking that Waldo had described the girl's clothes in a way the ordinary man wouldn't know how to describe them. Printed bolero jacket over blue silk crepe dress. I didn't even know what a bolero jacket was, and I might have said blue dress or even blue silk dress, but never blue crepe silk dress.
It informs you of all three characters at the same time. Yeah. One single path is brilliant. That's good short story, right?
Yeah, he describes the woman, he describes the character who said it, and he describes Marlo who reflects on it. Good point.
It's brilliant. Sorry, right?
Yes.
Could you describe your creative process of coming up with your idea and then setting about it to write it?
You know, the short story I had, I had wanted to do something ironical about Planned Parenthood. Don't ask me why. Okay. But at the same time, I knew that wasn't going to get published. You know, and it was hard to, how am I going to make it a mystery? And, you know, I could just write an essay, you know. But then I was thinking, I had another something going on in my head about a child star. So I just combined the two. The one thing I will say to you guys is be aware of your thoughts. Sometimes you'll have a flickering idea and it'll just pass away, you know, flutter away. I carry a journal with me. I really believe in journals. I don't write Dear Diary. I'm not Virginia Woolf. I'm not making grand statements in it. I'm writing down ideas. I'm writing down something that pops into my head, and I know if I don't get it down on paper, I'm just going to go away. And sometimes the ideas are stupid, but sometimes they're quite wonderful. I never write my dreams down. Don't ever write your dreams down. You know, let Freud figure those out. Yes.
Okay. From an actor's point of view, when you're saying dialogue, the emotion, the feeling, where you are, you do it. What is the equivalent of that on the page?
Well, it's interesting. Now, see, I was an actress, so... And I'm a writer now, so I only know how to write from having been an actress. I don't know what it is like for James, who was not an actress.
Brilliant.
But what it did for me was that I connected the emotion with the dialogue as an actress, and that's what I do as a writer. I know when my characters are speaking, I know the emotion that's underneath what they're saying. I know it intuitively because I had to, you know, come up with it as an actress. There's exercises for all this. You learned in acting class and all that.
You may know it, but how do you make your reader know it?
Okay, well, I make my reader know it by writing good dialogue. I mean, you know it. I mean, I see this is where I'm not a good workshop leader, but you can tell when dialogue is real or not real, even if you're not an actor, don't have to say clunky lines. Read it out loud. If it just falls like a rock in your lap, change it, you know? I mean, exclamation points in dialogue. You know, People don't run around going, egads, you know.
Mine do.
I'm sorry,
Jim.
I mean, mine don't, okay?
Yes. This is a question, I guess, for both of you about, you know, city short circuit out to the market. It comes back, maybe with or without notes. What's your usual process if it bounces back? Do you retool? Do you just send it to the next one?
Well, first you try to kill yourself. And then once you're over that, in all honesty, I haven't really been rejected since I was in my 20s and sending out short stories called Goodbye, Mrs. Rubberman, and, you know, that I thought were masterpieces. But it was a good experience because I learned what worked and what didn't by getting rejected. You know, I mean, that's, take the rejections, don't look at the rejections and say they don't know what they're talking about. Don't do that. I mean, they may not, okay? But I doubt it. You can all, look, even published short stories, I sometimes read some of my published short stories and I go, oh, God, I could be better than that. You know, it can always be better. It can always be better. Really, if they give you notes, they've taken time to do that, which means they think you've got something. Most people, they don't do that to.
The other thing, too, is then you should then ask the editor that if you will rework it, will they reconsider the story? Okay. Because what happens with me when I get an email from Linda or Janet or something, say, I'd like this except for such and such. I said, okay, let's change it. Never be too proud to alter your work for the market.
Yeah.
Because the editor knows what she's doing. And she's there to make sure that the story that gets published is the one that will appeal to the audience the most. However, having said that, if you do have a story rejected, it may be that you sent it to the wrong market in the first place. Which is why I say when you write the story, you should match it to the market that you're sending it to. For example, when I write the 18th century stuff, that all goes to Hitchcock. That's because Janet doesn't like the periodic sentences and the very historical fog, you know, that's around those stories. But she loves my hard-boiled stuff. So I will send Janet, a Cal-Op story I will send to Janet. And, you know, with the typical smart-ass L.A. private eyes, she just loves it.
I meant to tell you, I don't like Janet Poole's not a private detective.
No, she's sui generis. But like I said, I think Melody's a genius. She's one of my favorite short story writers in the world.
I will say something about writing for what are they called? E-Zine?
E-Zine.
Yeah. This is what, now please take this, okay. I think it can also, by doing that, can also create bad writing. Because they accept whatever. And you can get into thinking, gee, I'm good at this, and I know what I'm doing, and but then you go out to get published, and you're getting rejected. And I would just be careful of that, because it gives you a sense of being, you know, a published writer, but you're not really. You're not having that outside editor give your work a good, hard look. And that's important for writers. That's why a good workshop is important. You know, if you have a good teacher, you can really... I'm a good editor. I edit the hell out of my work. I have no problem taking out some of my best writing. I save it. Time is up.
Thank you, everyone.